any interesting properties that I will release list again, and call it topologically ordered phase. But today I want to say a couple of things about what happens when we have a quantum phase transition.
So let's start with this type of Hamiltonian. So we have the Hamiltonian of our toric code, and then this simple Hamiltonian that is an external magnetic field. Notice that, let me put X here so it's some things are clearer, even though it's the same. Notice that this term does not change the gauge structure because it commutes with the operator AN that enforces the gauge structure in the ground state. But we will see that this thing doesn't really matter. So the topological phase is for lambda much smaller than 1. And so we have seen that we have a degenerate ground state. So this degeneracy stays on until we have a quantum phase transition at some critical point, lambda c. Okay? So we have 4 ground states on a torus that are locally indistinguishable. So GS are locally indistinguishable. We have emergent fermions. We have decaying correlation functions because there is a gap. But this is the novelty. We know that usually you need a gap, a unique ground state. So here it's degenerate. So this is the new thing. Even if it's degenerate, you have decaying correlation functions, basically because these ground states do not talk to each other, because their degeneracy is topological. And then we have this long-range pattern of entanglement. Meaning that when I take a region A, the entanglement associated to the region A is equal to the size of the boundary minus a constraint gamma. And this constraint gamma, sorry, this correction gamma comes from a constraint on the whole boundary. So in this sense, it's long-ranged. Okay? Doesn't come from something that happens in one point. And we call this thing topological entropy. This object is exactly the size of the boundary when lambda is equal to 0. Otherwise, is multiplied by some function of lambda. So this is not universal, but this stays constant. So if I try to plot as a function of lambda the topological entropy, so starts from some value, gamma. Here I have my critical point. And it does like this. This is sharp. Like this. So in some sense, it's our order parameter. But it's non-local. It's a non-local order parameter. It's not some observable on a small system. OK, so all these properties are true in the whole phase until the critical point. So these properties are not the property of one state that is the ground state of the toric code, but of the whole phase. When lambda is much bigger than 1, then we have the Bohring paramagnet. in which nothing of these things are true. The ground state is unique, so there is no indistinguishability because there is no degeneracy. There is emergent nothing. There is no long-range entanglement. And in particular, when lambda is very, very large, the ground state is not only doesn't have long-range entanglement, but does not have entanglement at all. It has this form. It's a product state. By this, I mean up plus down over square root of 2. The eigenstate of eigenvalue 1 of sigma x. Okay? This is for lambda. So let me put a minus so that is correct. Okay? So you remember that in our discussion about what are all the possible quantum phases, we saw that, okay, if here we have the paramagnet, which, by the way, also contains a completely factorized state, I encounter phase transitions because I move by conserving some symmetry. Moving means that I start from one state, say 0, and I move to some psi of lambda in this way by t, this time order product, minus I Now, if this h of s has some symmetry, then I cannot go from one symmetry to another without a phase transition, right? Because if it has some symmetry, all these states have the same symmetry. So a phase transition is happens because you break the symmetry. But if you are able, if you disregard the symmetry, so you say, no, H of S is any Hamiltonian that is local, then I can go everywhere, okay? And we asked whether this exhausts all the possible quantum states. And now we have the answer. So not only to go to a paramagnet, I encounter a phase transition, but you could say, oh, it's because you used this guy. Maybe if I used some other perturbation V that breaks any kind of symmetry, then I would be able to connect it with the paramagnet somehow. But all these properties that I listed are robust for every perturbation, regardless of symmetry. So the only way to change them is to encounter a phase transition. So this means that the ground state of the toric code, let me call it TO1, is somewhere here. And there is no way of going from here to here adiabatically with a local Hamiltonian. And this is not because symmetry is changed. In fact, from the symmetry point of view, this state and the paramagnet have the same symmetries, which is known. They do not have any particular symmetry. They are disordered in the sense of a local order parameter. If I impose symmetries when I move from here to here, of course, also this phase can break in different symmetry sectors that are all topologically equivalent, but they have different symmetries. And then I wonder, are there only two? Are there only the normal state symmetry breaking and the topological order like the toric code? The answer is no. So for instance, different gammas label different topological phases. So there are other topological phases And if gamma is, so gamma is an invariant. One second. Unfortunately, it's not a complete set of invariants. This means that you could have, so here we have gamma 1, here we have gamma 3, and we have gamma 2 here and gamma 2 here. So it may happen that two different topological faces still have the same gamma. So it's not a complete set of invariants. The complete classification of these faces in terms of quantities that belong solely to the ground state is not complete yet. Okay? So it is an open problem. What is the question? So you see, the world of quantum materials is much larger than we thought. You have many different ways of ordering them topologically, and then inside each of them, you can do your they can have different faces labeled by different symmetries. And they feature beautiful properties. They can have emergent anything, you know, emergent anions, emergent fermions, emergent SU2 gauge theory, emergent gravitons. Okay? So all the physics can be seen, if you want, as the emergent theory, at least a level of the excitations from a background. Yep.
From which model do you get emergent gravitons?
I don't know if it has a name, but it was of course invented by Xiaogang Wen. Mm-hmm. And he calls it a model with emergent gravitons. So it doesn't have, but it has this type of ingredients. So it is made of the sum of constraints. And it works on a spin system. Not spin half, but it's on a spin system. So this model, I am summing over constraints, right? I'm saying, oh, these four body terms gives me an energy constraint. These other four body terms gives me another energy constraint. And yeah, it's very similar. And in spirit, of course, the details are different. And it is another topological phase. So by the way, the fact that this thing is constant for every perturbation, then there is, at the critical point, it drops like this. So this has been shown in some cases. As I said the other day, there is no general proof of that. The other thing is, so we saw that when there is a quantum phase transition, there are critical indexes. And we have seen that we can sometimes map this theory here, because I have the gauge constraint, can be mapped onto the 2D Ising model, you remember? So because of that mapping, the critical indexes are the same, but we do not know two things. First of all, we don't know if this is also true when the mapping doesn't work, which is when we break the gauge structure. Second, we don't know if there are small corrections that somehow get lost in the calculation. There may be, because everything that is topological order is very subtle. For instance, this term is in fact very subtle. You know, this is a big term that scales with the size of the boundary. This is order one. This is just a number. It's very difficult to measure this thing. One of the open problems is okay, this is your order parameter. Well, how you measure it? So measuring entanglement is an extremely complicated thing. And then there are generalizations that are more interesting, like the Rényi entropy, but I don't have time to talk about this. Okay, so this is the end of the story from the point of view of the quantum phases. We don't have just symmetry. We have a much bigger world. Yeah.
So, I mean, you just said that the topological entanglement entropy is not enough to could classify different topologically ordered cases.
Yeah.
So what are the things like might allow us to classify those cases?
So what you could, what really classifies them is the defective theory of the excitations. So the defective theory of excitations can be seen in two ways. Either you know each of these particles, what kind of particles they are, basically. You know what is their mutual statistics, right? And, or equivalently, if you do the continuum theory, you have a field theory that is a topological quantum field theory. It's called topological quantum field theory because interactions are like the Aronoff bound one. They do not depend from on the distance. So they are not described by a Hamiltonian because Hamiltonian is an energy. And if you have, you cannot have action at a distance. You cannot transmit energy at a distance, right? But so they're described by Lagrangian because if you remember analytical mechanics, in Lagrangian formalism, you can put constraints, right? In a you can, so if this is a roller coaster, you can describe the motion of something on here with a Lagrangian because you can implement constraints. You can say, it has to move in this way. This is a global rule of motion. So it's, in this sense, it's topological. So topological quantum field theory tell you what are the rules when you move something around something else. So that is the way you classify them. But we would really like to see them not as the theory of the excitations, but of something that you can measure in the ground state. And so this classification in terms of the ground state is not complete. Although, you know, every day there are new results and you start.
But however, so this gamma depends on basically dark excitation, right?
And yeah.
It depends on the quantum dimension.
So it's the total quantum dimension, the sum of all of them. So you can have two theories that have the sum of all these quantum dimensions is the same, but they are different.
Mm-hmm. So the claim is basically that different topological order cases have completely different excitations.
Yeah. Okay. Now, other thing. What happens? So this is in the ground state, T equals 0. What happens at finite temperature? Okay. And now we have something that is very fascinating and very important. And that we already encountered at some point when we talked about the coherence. Okay. So we know that things thermalize, right? And we will talk about some things about thermalization in the last part of the lecture. But we know that they thermalize. So this means that you have your system in some initial state, and then at some point becomes the thermal state, where this is the Hamiltonian of your system. And usually this happens because your system is in contact with another quantum system that is already in the Gibbs state at the temperature beta. And because it's much bigger, somehow the interaction with this system doesn't change it. And then, you know, you can prove that if the other system doesn't change and it's in the Gibbs state, then also this one has to go to its own Gibbs state. Because the Gibbs state is different depending on the Hamiltonian that governs the system, but at the same temperature of the reservoir. Okay? So this is the typical scenario of statistical mechanics. And this is one of those things that when you see it for the first time leaves you with so many questions, and then you get used to it, you know, you learn to do calculations, but you must not get used to it. There are so many things that here are strange. So first of all, who put the reservoir in the Gibbs state? Right? then you, according to the scheme, you have a bigger reservoir that put it in the Gibbs state. Okay, who put the bigger reservoir in the Gibbs state? So how did they start thermalizing? So if I see my system, my total system as an isolated system, which is what the universe should be, how can it thermalize? Okay, so this is a question that somehow has been plaguing statistical mechanics from the beginning, and it is still a topic of research. Not everything is key. The second thing is, okay, if it thermalizes, how come we can store information? How come we have manuscripts from, you know, 2,000 years before Christ? Because when the Gibbs state is unique, so the only thing that changes the Gibbs state is the temperature. But you cannot write information if you have something unique. If you imagine that you have some system that is described by potential like this, and you want to write information by saying, okay, I am in this minimum, but the equilibrium state is not one of these two. It's some mixture of them, because the Gibbs state is unique. So this information will be erased at the end of time. Right? So the answer is that we are not at the end of time yet. So somehow, it takes time to mix these two things. So how much time does it take? So this is ordinary statistical mechanics. You remember what is the time of mixing between two minima? So if this is, so I am plotting free energy here. And here I have some label that labels the different configurations of the system. So minima of the free energy are equilibrium states locally. But the only final equilibrium state when I put my system in contact with some reservoir is the Gibbs state, which is unique. Why? Because the reservoir, even if the temperature is very small, can give you kicks at any energy. So if I put my system here, at some point I get a kick that is strong enough to make me go this way. And I mix the two sectors. However, we have learned that when we have symmetry breaking, you are stuck in one sector. For instance, you are stuck in the sector where the magnetization is positive, or you are stuck in the sector where the magnetization is negative, depending where you start from. So symmetry breaking is ergodicity breaking. I start with some initial conditions, and I cannot explore everything such that the total magnetization is zero, but I can only explore where the magnetization is positive, and I'm stuck there. So why it happens? Because as the system becomes bigger and bigger, this barrier becomes higher and higher. And this is the symmetry breaking. When this barrier becomes so high, you know, in the thermodynamic limit is infinite, you cannot go through. The reason why, when you have local symmetries, you don't have a residual magnetization is because this barrier doesn't get higher and higher as we make the system bigger. Remember, it is the Elitzur theorem. As we make the system bigger, the barrier stays the same. So symmetry breaking means that if I have my state 0 and my state 1, and there is a symmetry breaking, which happens at a temperature that is lower than a certain critical temperature, then this barrier will go higher and higher in the thermodynamic limit. So this barrier will scale with n. And the time necessary to go from here to here is given to e to delta f, so e to the n. And in the thermodynamic limit is infinite. So it's never infinite, but it grows very fast with the number of particles. So that's why we have hard drives. Hard drives work with this principle. Okay? So can we make a quantum hard drive? So I could prepare 0 plus 1, right? I mean, I could think that I prepare it. Although it's very difficult. In fact, we saw that when you have symmetry breaking, spontaneously you want to be here or here. And the reason why preparing it is difficult is the same because of why it lasts so little. In fact, in other words, you could say that you prepare it, but it's unstable. What is the reason? Is that if I prepare it in this one, and its orthogonal counterpart is this one. So we saw that in order to go from here to here, we need to operate on one spin to change the phase. So whereas from here to here, I have to do an extended operation, and if there is symmetry breaking, this involves n as a change of free energy. Here, to start with, the energy that I pay is always fine. Just like when I have a local symmetry. So for every finite temperature, this process wants to happen because entropy wins. Remember, delta F is equal to delta E minus T delta S. So if this energy barrier is finite, since the entropy is always extensive, for a large n, for the thermodynamic system, there is no way that this can be. So you always have a disorder. So you always want to tunnel from here to here, and then tunnel back. And this means that you destroy the phase relation. So you either are in 0 or in 1. This is with symmetry breaking, right? So it seems that every time we have a symmetry breaking, statistical mechanics imposes you the fact that you can have a classical memory. So you can, the stable, metastable states are classical. But the quantum states are short-lived, and that's why we don't see Schrödinger cats. So it seems that as long as symmetry breaking is concerned, there is no macroscopic quantum world. What is the question?
So it seems, I guess, sort of reasonable that you have this exponential relationship between time and activation energy. But is there a model of the reservoir that actually tells you how it gives energy to the system?
Yes, yes. There are many such models. The most famous one and most instructive one is the Caldera-Leggett model that describes the evolution of a two-level system in a bosonic bath. Let's say phonons, for instance.
Okay.
There are many such models, and they are treated with the theory of open quantum systems that I've written something in the notes. I don't know if I can mention anything now. Probably not, but yes. So that was it, right? So this was the explanation. We cannot have macroscopic quantum world. It's an emergent law of nature. But wait a second. Nature is not described just by symmetry breaking. There is something beyond symmetry breaking. So do we have other possibilities? Before I go ahead, let me repeat this. The fact that this is local, so that to go from here to here, I need to just measure one spin or act on one spin, is implied by symmetry breaking. Remember, when you have symmetry breaking, there is a local order parameter. There is an operator that distinguishes these two states. If there is an operator that distinguishes these two states, this operator connects these two superpositions. So these things are not accident. Symmetry breaking, so let me, symmetry breaking. means that you have a local order parameter. And this means that one basis is selected in, so this basis, in which you are, there is ergodicity breaking. So it means you're stuck and it's long-lived. But the local order parameter, the order parameter, spoils the phase relations. So makes this process possible. But what about here? Now we hear ground states in which I could encode information that are not connected by a local operator in any possible superposition. It's not just that we do not have a representative basis that the system likes. Otherwise, we would have spontaneous symmetry breaking. Any superposition inside this ground state manifold is equivalent, just like it is mathematically, but it is equivalent also physically. The system doesn't choose one spontaneously. So there is no way to connect them with the local operator, which means that every time I have one state here, phi 1, and one state here, phi 2, that are ground states of a topological order system. And these are not in the specific basis. This could be, even if I do phi 1 plus phi 2, and phi 1 minus phi 2, say, my energy barrier, free energy barrier, has always the form some function of n delta I minus some function of n, some density of s. So it's always extensive. So I cannot claim, oh, this term will always win, right? Because I have something that scales with n here too. Because the essence of topological order is that any two states must be connected by a non-local operation. So now the point is this the, do we have the right function of n such that we gain a critical temperature? So this depends on the statistical mechanics of how these operators can be created in the ground state because of the kicks and punches that you get from the environment. Okay, so you have to see case by case, but you have this possibility. Okay, so let's look at the toric code. And let's look at toric code in different dimensions. Okay? So let's look at the toric code in 2D, then in 3D, and then in 4 special dimensions. So you can repeat these constructions also in 3 and 4D. So for instance, in 3D, your AN operator becomes this. Your Plaquette operator is still this, but you have it on three planes. And in 4D, you have eight spins coming out of here, and you still have your Plaquettes. Okay? Then you have to be careful with the periodic boundary conditions. But I think you have a tutorial or homework with that. I don't know. To see the boundary conditions in higher dimensions. OK, so let's see. What is the statistical mechanics of this thing? Okay. So in 2D, my errors are loops, right? I connect one ground state to the other ground state when I create a loop. In order to create a loop, what I have to do is to create a little piece of string, and this the environment can do, and then start stretching it. And as I stretch it, the entropy increases. and increases in a way that is, if this is L, the number of configurations will be some constant to the L. So the entropy is the log of this, so it's something that is of L log C, right? So it's linear in L. But what is the energy that I pay? As long as I'm in the topological phase, there is, you don't pay any energy in stretching strings. If you paid energy in stretching strings, your ground state could not be the superposition of loops at every length, because it would be energetically not favorable. Okay? So you don't pay energy to stretch them. You only pay energy when you create them. So whereas your delta S scales with L, your delta E is order one. So even if in principle it could scale with N because it's a non-local operation, it happens to be a boring function of N that is a constant. So there is no way. And so there is not only no quantum memory, but also I can connect the state zero. Remember, this is true in every basis. So also a state zero and the state one cannot be connected. So there is no memory at all. At finite temperature, there is no, I cannot encode any memory in the ground state of the toric code in 2D. Is that clear? Doesn't matter what superposition I choose. It could be the one that I called 0 and the one that I called 1. Still, they are connected by a loop. They still have the same statistical mechanics. If I look at the topological entropy at finite temperature, people have done it. It's 0. So, of course, this is true at finite temperature. Okay? So, T greater than 0. If you wish, the only critical temperature is at 0, exactly at 0. Because we have seen that when you are in the ground state, then these objects, you cannot create these errors. The degeneracy is robust at t equals 0. But at t equals 0, this part is 0. So I can win at t equals 0. But for every t different from 0, entropy wins. Okay? And we notice that the topological entropy is 0. So this also seems that the toric code at finite temperature is not topologically ordered. It's only topologically ordered at t equals 0. And in fact, it is not. You can prove that you can connect the Gibbs state of the toric code in 2D can be connected to something that is completely separable. In 3D, now it becomes more interesting. So in 3D, one of our defects is still a loop, but the other one is a surface. Do you agree? So you have many surfaces because you have many qubits, but you have pairs. The operators that do not commute, instead of being these two non-contractible loops, are a non-contractible loop and a surface orthogonal to it. Okay? So let's say this carries z. No, let me say. Yeah, this carries z. And this is a surface, a big operator that carries x. And they anti-commute. Okay? So this is the operator that is responsible for going from 0 to 1. And this is the operator that is responsible for changing the phase from 0 plus 1 to 0 minus 1. So you see that this one can propagate freely, is deconfined. So I cannot protect the phase relations. But this one has the statistical mechanics of the Ising model in 2D. This one gives me the same thing that is symmetry breaking. So this means that here I have, in 3D, I have classical memory. And if I look at the topological entropy, it is gamma over 2. So it's not the full topological entropy. It's still at finite temperature. Of course, there is classical memory for T smaller than Tc. Right? There is a critical temperature below which energy wins, above which you also destroy that memory. But there is a critical temperature, a finite critical temperature. And this is gamma half for T smaller than the same Tc. We can prove that. And it is 0 for T greater than Tc. So we start seeing a pattern. We start seeing that somehow the presence of topological entropy and the type of memory we have are related, because they are there or not at the same critical temperature. So in order to be sure that this is the case, we have to look at 4D. Okay? In 4D, both defects are membranes. So they both have the right statistical mechanics. And now you have two critical temperatures depending on the two couplings of the plaquette and the star operator. So you have Tc1 and Tc2. Let's say that Tc1 is smaller than Tc2. At T smaller than Tc1, so below both critical temperatures, both membranes are confined. So this means that I cannot make any error. I cannot either flip from 0 to 1 nor destroy the phase relations. So at this situation, I have my quantum memory. In this situation, I have a macroscopic Schrödinger's cat, because I can prepare my system in a superposition that is long-lived, in a macroscopic superposition. So in 4D, quantum mechanics is telling us it's not law of nature that we cannot see the quantum world. And what is the topological entropy? It's the full gamma. So it's topologically. What happens in between? Can you guess? So when I am above the critical temperature of one, but below the critical temperature of the other.
Classical.
Classical memory. Of course. Because one of the two processes is forbidden, namely the one that destroys, the one that flips from 0 to 1. So I have my bit of information. But the other one is the confined, and I can change the phase relations. So the classical memory. And guess what is the topological entropy? Gamma half. So it's true. When classical memory is associated with some topological entropy, but it is not of quantum nature. And above both, you have nothing. You have zero. So this thing in 4D is not easy to prove. It's an incredibly complicated calculation to make. And it was made by a colleague of yours that did it as his PSI essay at the end of his did it as a, I don't remember if he did it as PSI or even before PSI when he was visiting as an undergraduate student, but it was, and maybe you know him, his name is Dalimil. Mm-hmm. So he's around. And this is a beautiful piece of work there. I don't know how he proved it. I mean, now I know, but I don't know how we came up with it. Okay. Okay. So it is not a law of nature that we don't see Schrödinger's cats. At least it is not a law of nature in four special dimensions. Now, do we have four special dimensions? Okay. So Davide knows the answer. But, but I disagree in the sense that as far as statistical mechanics, as far as emergent things are concerned, all that counts are scaling behaviors. What happens when I go from L to a larger L? Statistical mechanics is what emerges. What emerges depends on numbers, on how big it is, how it scales when you make it bigger. So compactified dimensions, are there or not? We don't care. No, because they are not scale, you know, they are not statistically, mechanically important in this sense, in the sense that I said. So we know that the toric code in 3D doesn't support a big Schrödinger's cat, but that's just the toric code. Does it exist a system in 3D or less? So in realistic dimensions that I can engineer in a lab, such that I can have a quantum hard drive? And this is an open question. And it's a beautiful topic of research. OK. So we are done with topological order. And I have 10 minutes to talk about with you about thermalization, if you still want. So remember, we had two big questions. One was the one that we just explored. Is quantum statistical mechanics really different from classical statistical mechanics? So do we have quantum metastable states, or the only metastable states are classical? And then, no, then we have not fundamentally different statistical mechanics in the quantum case. So I hope I've explained what is this problem and why it's still open. Okay? Because we know that in four special dimensions, quantum statistical mechanics and statistical mechanics are completely different. But the other question was, okay, forget the environment. In an isolated system, how do I thermalize in the first place? Yes?
So I had a question about that. So most like modern schemes for quantum computation, what do they use then?
They are not passive. So you do error correction. So the system is not isolated. So you can keep it away from equilibrium because you keep pumping entropy out because you do error correction. Here I'm asking about what is spontaneous. So we know that classical states can be spontaneously metastable. Do we have spontaneously metastable quantum states? If the answer is no, this means that we will never see a Schrödinger's cat. If the answer is yes, we know that it is possible, just very rare, because you must have the right model. The typical models have asymmetry breaking. And asymmetry breaking, we understand now why it doesn't support Schrödinger cats, why it has defacing. It protects you from dissipation, so you may not mix two different ground states, but it destroys the phase relations between superpositions. The other big question, that is the oldest question, because it's already a classical question, is how do I thermalize in the first place? So this was the problem of Boltzmann, right? He said, okay, you guys, Clausius, Kelvin, you showed us that entropy always increases spontaneously. But, you know, thermodynamics is something emergent, right? The real theory is Newton theory that, you know, but with many, many particles, statistical mechanics. I'll prove you that there is a quantity that has always to increase. Is H theorem. And then Loschmidt said, look, no, not really. You made some mistake. You cannot get something reversible from fundamentally time reversal equation of motion. And Boltzmann suicided. Really. He fell into a big depression. He thought that he was a loser, that the community of his peers didn't recognize his value, and he shot himself. No, what hanging? He was a serious guy. He shot himself. He had a beard like this. Also, Loschmidt had a beard, so these guys had big beards. They, you know, 19th century people, very melodramatic. So they, all right. Okay, so in the quantum case, so now, since then, people have made a lot of progress on the problem at the classical level. But in the let's talk about the quantum case. The quantum case is even worse, because evolution is not only reversible in a generic sense, it's unitary. So not only do not have thermalization, I do not even have equilibration. So equilibration, so thermalization means that I increase the entropy and I end up in some state that is universal, that is the Gibbs state. Equilibration is something much weaker. It's just saying that if I wait long enough, my state equilibrates to some state that doesn't need to be universal. It could be a state that remembers the initial state. But that's, it's steady, right? It doesn't keep evolving. And this is not possible. So proof. So if, and then we have to go. Equilibration is not possible in a closed system. So what does it mean? So I have my initial state rho zero, and it evolves in time as rho t by using a unitary map u t of rho zero, and by u t of rho zero I mean this map, so the adjoint action this operator, of the unitary operator, of the unitary operator. On rho zero. And so, okay, so let's, I want to say that equilibration is not possible, which means that this limit either doesn't exist, or if it exists, is trivial. And I will explain what trivial means. Okay? Okay, so impose that it exists. I will show them, then it's trivial. That the only limit points are trivial. Okay. So if this is true, rho infinity is a fixed point, right? Ut of rho infinity is still rho infinity. Right? Cannot keep evolving if it's the limit point of this evolution. Very good. So now let me consider the difference between my rho at the time t and my limit point. And as usual, I will quantify this difference by taking the norm. Well, because now I plug this in, right? So let me just, I can do this, right? And now the unitary operator is a linear operator, so I can write this. Okay. So what did we learn about norms and unitary operators? We used it in the proof of the Lieb-Robinson bounds. Norm preserving. Okay, so this is just rho zero minus rho infinity. So if rho infinity is this limit, when I take this limit, then this goes to zero, right? So in the limit of t infinity, this is zero. And this also is zero, even if t has disappeared. So if rho infinity is a fixed point, it was already there from the beginning. In this sense, it's trivial. So it was, or in other words, it was an eigenstate, or the Gibbs state. Or in general, so mathematically, rho infinity, so rho zero was from the beginning something that will commute with the Hamiltonian. So something that does not evolve in time. So we do not have non-trivial evolutions that end up in equilibration. Either you are already there, but you cannot start from something that is evolving and then you equilibrate. And this is because, the crucial point is here. Evolution is unitary, so it's non-present. There is no way around it at this level. So how do stuff equilibrate? And so I will leave you with this question. Think about it. We understand now equilibration very well. Thermalization, we are all, is still not completely clear. Okay, so let me just mention 30 seconds. Equilibration happens in probability. It means that imagine that I somehow compute the overlap between rho zero and rho of t. Okay? So if they are pure states, I really do rho, my psi zero, psi t modulus square. Okay. Imagine that I would observe situations like this. So as you can see, this function doesn't have a limit. It still keeps having a non-trivial behavior, right? There is no limit point. But at almost all times, it's indistinguishable from the orange line. So although it's non-trivial, it's very unlikely to see the difference. So this is the mathematical possibility that is left. And if you do, so there is an exercise in the notes, which is sketch the solution. If you do that with the so-called quantum quench of the Ising model, you will see this plot. So it happens. And I think we are done. Thank you.